There's a new season of Little People Big World on, and that's not what I'm going to talk about, but it is why this is like semi-relevant to right now.
Okay, I'm interested. I didn't know about this.
The last time we talked briefly about Little People Big World, you had mentioned that you always thought that the older brother, Jeremy, was kind of hot, and I said that he had some weird religious views.
I don't know. Kind of hot feels inflammatory. It's fine. I mean, well, I feel weird about it now because they're like children. I can't like say that. I thought he was kind of hot when I was younger.
He's exactly okay, our age.
I haven't seen photos of him at our age. I don't know about this.
Okay. I mean, he looks mostly the same. But anyway, he and his wife, Audrey, Jer and Audge, as they go by, which I think
Sure.
So they have a business / blog that's like to help other people stay married. So they post advice on like dating and like just how to keep your marriage happy and alive. And then they also do like wedding photography and stuff. But I visited this website.
They'll celebrate God's love. They'll be out here.
I went to their website once and it featured a post that advised couples to do something that they did. And to enhance intimacy, that you should obviously wait to have sex for your wedding night. Like, you, of course, that's a given. But
I mean, anytime that you like take a breath, you know, and you've been going at it and you take a break and you don't have to have never experienced it before, never experienced it even with this person. Right. But, you know, it can create an exciting time when you come back to it. OK,
so they say you're going to wait till your wedding night, but then when you have sex for the first time, or as Austin has mentioned, the first time after a long forced dry spell, that you should hold eye contact during penetration for the entire time while it's not over, while reciting Bible verses to each other.
No. And at that, I am out. I mean,
and I'm picturing it and I hate it. I hate it so much.
I'm not against eye contact in bed, obviously, but I just think any time that you, in any scenario, sexually or other, that you're just like, let's just hold prolonged eye contact and make a plan to do that, I don't find that pleasurable.
It's not really very authentic or natural to me.
It's certainly not when you start being like, Luke chapter 6, like, whoa, okay, wow.
Yeah. Wow.
On that note, I guess, also welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome. It was an important thing for people to know.
That's the ticket.
And remember, the greatest myth about the moon is that America went there in Apollo 11. Good night. Good night.
Next week on Blood Magic Menstruation, the podcast.
I love that we just Me Too'd God.
Is franchising our platform? We're franchising it, okay?
They're going to break your legs and feed you to the sharks.
Yeah, people don't care how many times Dan Brown says that book was a work of fiction. I'm saying.
Well, we've brought it back to blood magic somehow.
I hope you finger blast every time you listen to this podcast. That's just a light good suggestion. Pairs well with finger blasting, okay? Welcome. Why Are You Like This is the weekly podcast where we dissect some part of our culture, human behavior, what the TLC families of yesteryear are doing.
Or this year.
Or this year, really, whatever year. You know, some Bible verses, we'll get into it. But we do all of this goodness in order to determine why people are the way that they are. That is Jamie Ryan keeping us all abreast about Little People Big World in present day in Los Angeles.
And that is Austin Williams walking back her attraction to Jeremy Roloff in Chicago.
Yeah, I think that's right. I thought he was cute when I was like in high school. I don't know if I'm attracted to the same.
He's a classically attractive millennial teen, like for the times.
Yeah, but listen, what you need to know is I went to Catholic school. I'm not going to spend all this time walking this back, but
my God.
I went to Catholic. He looked like a lot of like perhaps the other religious teens that I knew growing up. So he kind of fit into the archetype of like who the cute boys were in my hemisphere. And that expanded, thank God, later. But, like, did he look like he could have been on the baseball team at the all-boys school that I used to, like, do theater at? Yeah, and those guys were hot. When I was 16, to be clear. When I was 16.
Okay? Right, because then when you see them as an adult, yeah, you're like, wow, they look 12. But we are not here to talk about the roll-offs any more than we already have. But what we are here to talk about.
We could try, but maybe not. I don't think they need more press.
I mean, it's easy to shoehorn it into the episode. I think it was an apt lead-in since we are indeed going to be discussing purity culture. And
you guys, we're back.
Here we are. You clicked on it.
Puritanical views.
Yep. You clicked on it. You know what it is. We're going to do a fucking courtship. This is, yeah, a recap. A summary. We watched it so you don't have to. Some of us watched it more than once. I think maybe both of us did.
I think both of us watched it more than once. Honestly, it was... Whew. You guys, if you were here many seasons ago, and I hope you were, and if you weren't, if you enjoy this episode or this is just fodder that you have some questions about or interest in, man, we did an episode many moons ago on purity balls and just like... fathers like signing contracts with their daughters about their virginity and all these things in this culture. And this is truly another level in terms of just choices made in lifestyle, because
virginity balls 2.0 for sure.
Virginity
it's
balls,
the master class of purity culture.
Yes.
So you guys, A Courtship, it's a 2015 documentary that you can watch if you'd like to for free on the Roku channel or Tubi, which is an unusual
resource. I watched it on Tubi.
Yeah, go for it.
Yep.
But it's
there.
From 2015, hits like it's from 2008 for sure, but it's directed.
Definitely, but doesn't Christianity always seem to be a decade behind? No,
that's what it
are?
Is. That's all that it is, and the fashions, and we will get into it. But it's directed by Amy Cohn, who I looked up and saw that she
Thank
previously.
God someone needed to.
Amy Cohn previously worked as a producer on Kathy Griffin's My Life on the D-List, among many other kind of like pop culture-y things. But currently, she works on something that I love. Since 2017.
Oh, fucking Plathville, is it?
No, you'd think. I bet she applied for it.
Okay.
But she works currently as a producer since 2017 on Real Housewives of New Jersey.
Oh, my God.
It's unreal.
Wow.
Yeah. But her only director credit. Her only director credit is A Courtship. And so with that in mind.
Amy's having a classic career. I want to have Amy over for dinner. She's doing Real Housewives. She's doing this deranged documentary we're about to tell you about. And she was involved in Kathy Griffin's My Life on the D-List. Like, I'm like, this actually, what I have learned from this is that if she chose those projects and was excited about them, like, individually and collectively, like, Amy could be the third host on this show. Like,
I
she's
know.
One of us.
I know.
Amy. Girl, if you're listening, okay, all right.
And that definitely colored my second viewing, I have to say. Like, the way that...
I'm going to have to go back and watch it a third time now that I know this.
Things were shot in, like, a pretty shady way. Anyway, I don't want to give away too much because, like, I just want to give it to everyone straight. We can just tell you everything about this fucking documentary from the top to the bottom.
Okay, I would love to. And if you don't mind, if you're ready to do that...
I am.
I would love to jump into... They do what we do here at Wire Like This. Maybe that's another reason Amy should be with us. Okay. It opens pretty cold before we hit a little bit of true exposition. But the first thing they do at the beginning of this, and it's an hour and 10 minutes, 70 minutes of your time, you guys. Without credits, it's less than that. Okay. But... The first thing they do is, like, kind of reference the divorce rate. And they're like, listen, you get married, you flip a coin, like, 50-50, maybe you get divorced, maybe you don't. Those are your odds. And I'm like, okay, grim. But the next thing they kind of start saying is they're like, women going to college lose that protection. And they're talking about, like, the protection of your family for, like, your purity and just, like, innocence,
it's dangerous
whatever.
Dangerous for young women.
Right. And then this is my next favorite part in this, like, pre-credits, pre-what's really going on here energy. They tell you, like, they shoot to, like, a car in a neighborhood, and it's, like, Grand Rapids, Michigan. And in the background, it's just, like, a McDonald's. And then
but
they show you, like,
that, it's
some
been
kind of
– a couple running on the beach in wedding attire before that in slow motion.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I felt like that was a little bit more of a stock kind of image. But, yeah, that did happen in here.
I think it was a juxtaposition, like, of fantasy and reality, perhaps, from Amy. But go on.
You know what? I think that's right. But then they show you just, like, farm country. And I just want to say, like, that's not what I think or know about Grand Rapids. What I know about Grand Rapids is like a bunch of weird artists, a lot of specific.
We have listeners there. Hey.
Yeah. And at some point, the people we'll get into it who are our kind of main leads in this, one of them says, like, you know, these folks are from the South and like, so am I. And so, you know.
Yeah, you're right.
That's like how we get along. And so I was like, maybe that's why they're painting Grand Rapids this way, because it's more about the characters. Right. I don't know. I just, if I were from Grand Rapids, I would be upset.
Yeah.
That's
all I have offended to say. Even, perhaps.
Offended even. I think that's right. So that's kind of our quick entry level, and then they're kind of like a courtship, and you're like, what is about to happen?
Mm-hmm. And then the whole film is film. The whole documentary is broken into three acts.
You can call it a film.
So we open with summer, and eventually, of course, we'll get autumn and winter. But summer opens with what Austin mentioned, the shots of the rural town. And we meet Ron and Don Wright, who are in, I don't know where they are, but they're sitting at a table chatting with another couple.
They're in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
They are.
Near a McDonald's. Okay.
And they're chatting with another couple who are like about their same age, and they're giving advice about courtship, like for the other couple's children. And they're explaining like that their daughter, who is also sitting right there, the kids are always like right here for all these weird conversations.
They're always there absorbing these toxins.
Mm-hmm. Just like chewing on their lip. That younger daughter just like constantly chewing her lip. But,
chewing her lip.
Mm-hmm. So Ron is running through that, like, his daughter will not be, like, going to college. She will not be going off on her own. And Dawn chimes in to say that it was Eve who was deceived. So she's...
Oh, listen, don't even get me started. Because before they're even, like, Savannah is not going to college. One of the things that Ron says as he goes, courtship is normal. Dating is unnormal. Which, I love the use of the word unnormal. But yeah, they're like, she's not going to get a degree. She wants to be a mom and a housewife. You know, having the protection of a man is safe. And then it's that blaming Eve for deception. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? Like, we're like, again, like being like, you know, women, original sin. They really did this.
We were too dumb.
Lesser of the sexes.
Easily deceived. Like, we cannot be off on our own. We cannot be left alone. Because we'll be deceived. But the best part of this is that the other couple, who they're like seemingly counseling or something, the mom is like, she's like, well, how do you know that your daughter will be able to be a wife and a mother? Isn't that kind of...
She says, what if she doesn't get married? What if she doesn't have kids? That's not guaranteed.
It might not be in the cards. And Ron just doubles down and says that his daughters will be with them until they walk down the aisle.
Yeah, he's like, you know what? If it doesn't work out, they'll just stay with mom and dad. And in my mind, I'm older than these kids. I'm a little bit, maybe a little bit more morbid. We can't know. But I was just like, what happens when mommy and daddy die? Like, what do you
mean? They inherit the house and you stay there.
Oh, man.
I think
but
that's what
enter
it is.
Yes. In a confessional kind of style, really the woman that this journey is, I would say, centering on.
Yeah.
Enter Kelly.
Kelly Bogus.
Ooh, Kelly. Ooh.
A toothy lass.
Yeah, I mean, really. She is 33 years old.
She is.
And she, it's, you know, subtitled. They don't even really speak to this. And, you know, maybe there's probably a Goog or a little research you could do on your own, we could do on our own, any of us, to find out really the backstory here. But they tell us just early on that she's basically been like a devout Christian since her sophomore year in college. And we get a little bit more.
You think it was Crew?
As we go.
Campus Crusade. Got her.
Listen, we can't know. No, Campus Crusade's definitely too liberal for these people, and that's saying something because that's a wildly conservative organization, okay?
You're right.
But Kelly's basically coming in here, and she's like, you know, if she meets someone who, like, the first things you know, she's like, if I meet someone who would be a good mate, a good match, like, I would ask them to meet Ron. And my immediate thought is, well, that's probably why she isn't married.
Yes, it is. That is probably why she isn't married. When we meet her, she's teaching a very Christian dance class also.
Very Christian dance class, like very non-secular music. It's, you know, it's something. But she lets us know that, like, she started babysitting for Ron and his wife, Dawn, after college. And you're like, oh, okay.
Okay,
Ron's
so she
like
was,
approving.
Like, 25.
Right. And, like, Ron's who you're going to bring your future husband to, but, like, you're his babysitter, what? And so what she tells us, sweet Kelly, is she says, I had been praying for years for spiritual parents.
And who gave her that idea?
Silence.
I know.
Who Who said, you know what you could have are spiritual parents?
Where'd she see that template? Yeah, I really wonder.
I mean, truly. And Ron and, like, she approaches Ron and Dawn and, like, asks, like, if they'll be her spiritual parents. And this is just, like, I mean, guys, we are, like, not even 10 minutes in yet. And Ron and Dawn are, like, we will pray about it.
We need to pray about it. Ron,
they're, like, we need to pray about it. We prayed about it multiple times. And then they're, like, we came to the conclusion that if this was going to work, Kelly needs to move in with us. Which I was, like, this is a cult. I was, like, yeah. Hello. And at this point in the documentary, in this, like, time, she's been living with them so far for 7 years at the beginning of this.
It's really awful. And we get, like, shots of her climbing into what looks like a child's bed in a child's room at their house.
Absolutely.
Her hair is in pigtails. She's in, like, straight up jammies. Like, and there's a bunch of pictures taped to the wall around her headboardless bed. It's a vibe.
But it's a vibe.
Then we get into the dates a little bit. So part of Ron's role as a father figure, if you will, is to screen.
As a spiritual parent,
as a spiritual parent, is to screen potential spouses, not dates, spouses, for Kelly, as Austin has alluded to. So we see Ron going on a date with a man for Kelly. And this man is easily 55.
Okay, good, because I have in, like, I, like, my immediate thought about this guy, and I wanted to make sure we harped on it, was I just looked at him and I went, this guy is old.
Yeah, he's, like, Ron's same age, I feel.
A hundo P, and I have younger. Some thoughts on why that might be, but we'll get to it.
Interesting. So Ron's questions on the little date for him include, what do you think about Obama playing around in Israel? And then,
do you ever watch Glenn Beck?
Unbelievable. And then the one that brings the date to a crashing end is,
yeah, this is intense.
Would you be comfortable with a homosexual elder in the church who was not practicing? So, i.e., like, a gay person who's not having sex, can they be an elder in the church? And the man is like, oh, yeah, like, that's okay. And Ron's like,
he's,
you know,
like,
what?
Yeah, I think I'd be fine with that. Like, he kind of hems and haws, but is like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. And Ron says that, like, that's not going to work. And so, like, that's a wrap on that date. And then we're going to pivot to Dawn, a voiceover from Dawn, the wife, while we see Kelly vacuuming. A lot of these scenes open on, like, Kelly doing housework at the Wright's house.
Like, Kelly is their housekeeper. They're like, you know what? For this to work, Kelly's got to live with us and do all of our chores. Okay.
Legitimately, yeah, I do feel like she's earning her keep. So we see various shots of this, like, extremely full house that they've somehow given her a room in, although it looks like the other daughter's beds are, like, perhaps crammed into one room. I have questions about the arrangements.
So many questions.
But Dawn's voiceover tells us, Ron and I made a commitment that Kelly will live with us until she gets married. If I was a guy and I was single, I would marry her. And I'm just like, why did she say that? Why did she say that? I don't know.
Why would you say, if I was a single guy, I would marry her? I'm like,
is that a little latent bisexuality creeping through? Like,
perhaps. And this energy about, like, we're not looking for them, we're going to wait for God to bring them to us, about these men. Also, I just want to cite this. This is my favorite part about my original note-taking when I watched this documentary. I know that the wife's name is Dawn, but for the first half of my notes, the first time I watched it, I just called her Stephanie for some reason. Which I think is funny. And I think you'll find even funnier if you watch the documentary. Okay.
Wow. Oh, my God. That's amazing. She looks more like a Nini than a Stephanie, like if we had to create a nickname derived from Stephanie.
Absolutely agree.
She reminds me of the woman in the bestiality documentary that I watched that had sex with the dog.
I thought that the should we put mushrooms in the salad lady? Reminded me so much of the people we saw in the bestiality stuff.
Oh my God,
and the people we saw in object sexuality, which I'm sure they would really frown upon both of these because they're like, a courtship, dating is unnormal. Mm. And I'm like, they remind me of people who have sex with dogs in the Eiffel Tower. And so I got some questions, but
okay. I'm glad we could both
touch
down.
Dawn makes this comment, right, about like, if I was a single guy, I would marry her. And then they tell us, like, and I think it's Kelly who says it to us, but she says, there's never been a guy that, like, she was also interested in her. And I was like, oh, okay.
That Ron also approved of,
Well, no, not even that Ron approved of, just, like, they never had overlap of, I'm interested in someone and they're also interested in me. She's like, never happened.
That says a lot about her general fear of intimacy, which I think is like probably just like the thesis of this documentary.
I would not agree more and cannot wait to continue to unpack that. But first, we have to unpack the next cutscene. God, I love documentaries like this and the shit they cut to.
The drawings. So they immediately take it away on the drawings.
Their children with these scary notebooks, that's what I'm calling them, with basically drawings of their wedding. And it's like these pictures where it's like,
kids,
you know,
of various
this
ages.
Is my proposal. This is my wedding day. Like, this is, we're a honeymoon. But then where it really takes a turn is one of the girls is like, I really copied like a period piece dress in this one. This is just like her wedding dress. And she goes, this is my Civil War wedding. And like, and I want it like a Civil War. And at some point, Dawn says to like her daughter, she goes, is he going to be wearing a Confederate uniform? And she said, he better be or I'm not going to marry him. And I was like, yep. Sorry, what?
Yeah. And we'll revisit that later. I won't spoil it. Yeah.
Mm. Mm. It was a dark and scary turn.
It was
quickly
very dark. And also, what a weird thing to like groom your daughters to do when they're like too young to understand getting married at all. Because like there's one daughter that's
or to
like,
understand the Civil War, honestly.
Or that, yeah. So there's one daughter that's very much like in elementary school, the one with the super dark circles around her eyes. And then there's I can't tell how many like preteen slash teen daughters, but like the one that does the Civil War drawing is like too old to be doing these drawings. It's
yes, it all feels very stunted, and it's a very kind of like wish board kind of thing, but it feels really juvenile and very like
abstract.
Enveloped in like just like a fantasy that like really I don't think girls that age spend too much time thinking about, like, outside of a community that's really pushing
it
that.
Constantly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but they start talking about, like, you know, how they raise their daughters, and they're talking about instilling purity from the jump. And then they go ahead and tell us that they are some of those people who believe that, like, the first kiss should be at the altar. And I'm like, we are not even saving the puss these times, guys. Like, we are saving our lips.
We are. And all lips of all kinds.
This is my question for you because I need hard confirmation.
Yeah.
But we pivot into a dramatic reading of The Princess and the Kiss, read by Dawn, the mother. And isn't this the same book from we saw in Purity Balls?
It is. It's the same book. It's the same children's story.
Essentially, it's all about like how this prince like comes to the kingdom and like her, you know, like he's interested in the princess and like her parents gave her this special gift, her first kiss, and like don't give it away to anyone that's like not your husband, blah, blah, blah. And listen, Dawn is reading this. And again, just a quick reminder, Kelly is 33 years old and Kelly is crying.
She is sobbing
during the reading of this book, like just streaming
just
down.
Just
kind of
off to the side, very emotional.
Right. And this is where the shame comes in because she says she's saving her next kiss, but
her
has
next.
Already given away her first kiss.
Absolutely.
And Ron jumps in saying, like, giving away her first kiss has to be impacting her. And then, like,
and
Ron
it's made
and Dawn,
his,
like,
his job a little more difficult because nobody wants her because she's used up.
She's used up with that first kiss.
She's
and
hard
Ron
to market.
And Dawn, though, then it comes out very quickly, and this is always the case, just like in Purity Balls, where all those people were like, oh, yeah, I fucked a ton of bitches before I made my daughters never touch anyone. And Ron and Stephanie are like, we didn't save our first kiss.
Her name is not Stephanie.
Oh, my God. See, I told you her name is Dawn. Ron and Stephanie. She's Stephanie in my notes and in my heart. You know what I'm saying? I'm glad I prefaced that earlier so you knew where it was coming from.
Oh my
god,
meant so
to be.
Funny, yeah.
I changed her name to Dawn at some
I
point
love it.
Later.
So if you guys, if you say Stephanie, I know what you mean. It's fine.
Listen, it's Dawn. Dawn, okay?
Oh.
But listen, Jamie, you gotta tell us about this because to your point of these seasons, this is when we enter autumn.
It is. But before we enter autumn, I have to add one more thing about the time where we're reading The Princess and the Kiss at the dining room table or kitchen table and Kelly is crying. What happens at the end of that is Dawn looks at her daughter, touches her hair, and says to her under 10 daughter, says,
unbelievable.
Regarding your gait, your fucking pussy, regarding your gait, We won't let any lions or wolves come in. Okay? And the eye contact is so intense. And the child just, like, chews her lip as usual. But, like, regarding your gate, what?
I mean, I'm mortified. I'm mortified.
I'm going to call my underwear my gate from now on.
This is my pussy gate?
Yeah.
I don't know. Pussy gate. Okay. Oh, I love it.
That's great. Anyway, on to Autumn. So at this point, in my personal most recent viewing, I had to pause to smoke a bowl because I was just like, had been so furiously taking notes this whole time. But Autumn, back to school energy, it's time for Kelly to get a crush. So Kelly, we see, is at the family's desktop, creeping on her crush's Facebook, and his name is Ross.
Enter Autumn, enter Ross.
Kelly and Ross met at some kind of gathering and have been chatting via Facebook ever since. But of course, Kelly's going to need Ron's approval before she can go any further with Ross. And Ron is pretty concerned about, like, Kelly's ability to guard her heart in this matter.
And so the expression guard your heart, man, you guys, we're back here and it's a fucking doozy. That's all.
It sure is. So Ron sets up a meeting to talk with Ross and to measure him against, quote, Kelly's list, which we all know is Ron's list about Glenn Beck and homosexuality. And Obama.
Absolutely. It is. And Obama and Glenn Beck and the gays. Those are Ron's hard-hitting questions, okay? And I just want to say, I'm sorry, I just fucking can't. But before we see this meeting of Ron and Ross and co, we shoot to Kelly, like, brushing her hair in the mirror and stuff.
She transforms from math teacher to violin teacher.
I mean, honestly. And she's talking about controlling the desire to want to be pretty or noticed. And it, like, makes me so sad because I'm like, all people should – it's human to want to be noticed.
Yes.
Like, what? Yes.
I know.
It breaks my heart a little bit.
I was sad for, like, her basically, like, describing supernormal butterflies as, like, something that she should be worried about.
Just human behavior. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's, like, a super weird dinner. This is, like, their first, like, quote, date. But, of course, because, like, courtship, quiverful, purity culture stuff, they can't be alone with each other. So it has to be, like, a big group situation. So Ross has basically come over for dinner, and he's brought a friend or a brother or someone.
It's his brother, Paul. And okay. I have this described as... And they, and then in all caps in my notes say, are the most awkward people ever.
That I've ever seen. Yeah.
It's such an uncomfortable moment. And I did think to myself, okay, there are cameras, so, like, that might, like, create some of that energy.
Big Boy Scout vibes all around.
Oh, God, it's so bad. And the first little scene of that dinner is, like, Ron, like, praying thanks for them coming. And I just have to acknowledge the prayer because my favorite part of this is after Ron finishes praying, everyone at the table claps. And I was like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the energy. You know, he's the father. He's the priesthood, et cetera. But, like,
please clap.
Then after the clapping, they eat a little bit. Dinner is, like, super awkward. Seems mostly silent. Like, Kelly's trying to ask some questions, but, like, the whole family is there watching, and, like, Ross is just joking awkwardly about courtship. Ron is, like, staring at him like a serial killer. And then the whole dinner scene wraps on, like, I'm going to say, Amy, a little bit of constructive criticism here. For too long at this point, we get, like, classical music over silent shots of everyone, slow motion, looking happy, and Kelly giving flirty smiles to Ross.
I mean, it does set a tone.
It does.
Not a lot was said at dinner, I think. What Amy gave us is maybe how the family saw it happening in their own mind.
I need to remember her juxtaposition of fantasy and reality. You're right.
Shout out to you, Amy.
Thank you, Amy. So then...
our third host.
We get Amy. Our phantom host, Amy Cohn. I'm not sure. Get at us, Amy. But then we're going to pivot to, like, just briefly touch down on some, like, American statistics and see a quick little gathering of a home church, perhaps in the Wrights' home or someone else's home. I'm not sure. But
help us, Lord.
We get some on-screen text about 6 million people in the U.S. attending home churches each year. And that's in 2015. So... could be a little different now, but basically, like, the
could be even more. I don't know what COVID did to these people.
I don't, it's polarizing. But basically, the point of this scene is, like, I think to show us that there's a lot of other people like this. Like, Don and Ron are not an isolated incident because they have a house full of people.
Which I think is important to call out because sometimes you see stuff like this and it feels so hyperbolic. It's why seeing the virginity balls, you know, is so wild because you're like, there are a lot of people attending this.
A lot of people in the documentary too. There were like six families. And then when the – anyway, guys, just get back in the archives. Virginity balls, giving my purity to my dad.
Oh, giving the purity to my dad. Yeah, that's right. No, but you're right. They're calling it out and saying, listen, these people are not anomalies. They're not just like the weirdest people we could find or something.
Yeah. And we just see like Don asking a bunch of Fundy kids a bunch of like awkward questions about kissing and lust. And they give answers that are just kind of spitting out what their parents have clearly told them. And it's always weird to hear like a 9 to 12-year-old talking about like just keeping their pussy tight, basically, you know?
Or saying those unchristian girls would probably be like talking about their boyfriends, but like we're talking about like our courtships.
I also think that that's a way for like people who are maybe a little socially nervous or feel like maybe they're not as attractive as their peers who are maybe a little scared to date. I think it's like an easy way to like not engage with that at all and just kind of like
100%
wait, let it come to you. And I would say that maybe some of that's going on for Kelly, but who's to say for sure?
I think maybe a little bit, but I think a lot of it with Kelly is like emotional removal. We'll get
agree,
into it.
Agree.
There's more to come.
Yeah, when we meet her bio family, things get real. But now we're going to pivot to Ron showing us a montage of photographs from his life with Dawn previously while he tells us how rough the early years of their marriage were when they were younger.
Right.
And we see a lot of pics.
He and Dawn were not raised in this culture. And Dawn goes, but I think this culture is more beautiful. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. And some of the pics we see are their wedding and Dawn smoking and then like them on a few vacations. But I thought it was funny they threw the like smoking one in there to be like, this is when they were bad.
They were like, they're bad.
Well, they probably submitted bad. That photo, actually, I'm realizing. So this is Dawn and Ron.
Absolutely.
Yeah, reminding us that they were once cool. But cut to Ron in his office with his daughter, who appears to be helping him maybe ship some books. And this is where we learn about Ron's second business when he isn't making very much money from snow plowing. Sometimes he makes money from something called beforethekiss.com.
This, when the screen goes to black, it says, when not working as a snowplow dispatcher, Ron manages a website devoted to courtship. And I was just like, of course he does.
Did you visit this website?
I actually didn't, but I know you did.
Okay. I attempted, and it doesn't exist anymore. But when we do a Where Are They Now at the very end of all this, you'll find out why it doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, God bless.
Yeah. So beforethekiss.com is a resource curated by Ron, content often run by Ron, that helps educate families on how to raise their children in courtship. Also, Kelly came up with the name Before the Kiss. And in regards to like the producers probably asking him, like, what the fuck is this website? What is your business? Ron starts launching into like some kind of monologue about like preparing young women for marriage. And he says, what does it mean to be ready for marriage? Can she cook? Can she clean? Can she run a house? And so that gives us a little info on like what beforethekiss.com is about. And Kelly tells us in an aside from her that she is preparing herself to be a homeschool mom and a stay-at-home mom. And then we're going to wrap all that up in a bow by now cutting to Dawn, who is homeschooling her own children with a Confederate Absolutely. Flag visible in the background.
I can't.
Yeah. Then we're going to open on Kelly washing the dishes in the Wright's kitchen because it's not a cut if it doesn't start with Kelly doing housework. Because Kelly's around and Ron and Dawn have some secrets about Ross that they need to discuss, Ron and Dawn tiptoe into the garage where they sit in the captain's seats of their minivan to discuss Ross away from Kelly.
100%. And I love it. It's absolutely a white Dodge Caravan. I'm certain of that. The car that they get into.
It took me back.
Like, we're just going to step out
to hiding in your mom's van.
I just want to even shed a little bit more color on what we learned about Ron and Dawn and their relationship before we even hear this little tidbit of this conversation. Because they talk about in that photo montage that Jamie described that they had been together for 3 years and then they had what Ron called an emotional divorce.
Oh, my God. I forgot about the emotional divorce. Thank you.
Yeah, and to this point, what you're saying about, you know, this website and the Before the Kiss, he says, you know, we were never instructed how to find a good mate. We found ourselves, like, through dating, but we don't want that for our kids. It was a horrible time. And so then Dawn's interjection in there is she's talking about how she doesn't have to wear the pants in the family, that Ron is the leader, and that if something goes wrong, it's not her fault. She says that directly.
That's right.
And so now you've got them, mm-hmm. like, getting in this Dodge Caravan. But I just want to paint the dynamics that Dawn's like, well, if it doesn't go the way it, like, should go, it's Ron's fault, and, like, he's my leader. But, like, it's just very interesting.
Dawn says, no choices, no responsibility. I'll take it. That's what she wants.
She wants it.
So Ron is explaining to Dawn that he has concern, or that Ross is wanting to pursue perhaps a relationship. He is interested in next steps. And Dawn is...
Yeah, Ross has called Ron at this point to say he wants to get to know Kelly a little better.
He has indeed. And Ross is really just like Kelly's manager, basically. But...
Hondo P. He's like her Christian pimp.
Yeah, there it is. But Dawn is concerned that if they tell Kelly that she'll get excited too quickly. And so they toy with not telling her for a while. But ultimately...
Actually, though, Ross asked them not to tell Kelly.
That's right. That is
so it's like every
up.
And Dawn thinks that's good. Like
she
Dawn's
does.
On board.
She needs that heart guarded.
Point.
Yeah.
Guard that heart. Guard and Ross, the boo, like also is trying to guard said heart. Crazy.
He is big time guarding it. So then we move on to what the family calls the first date. So I guess like that dinner was kind of just a preliminary meeting. And
that was like a getting to know you, getting to know all you.
Because they didn't explicitly tell us like where they were going for the first date, I was really like struggling to figure out where we even were like when this date started. So
it is just some sort, I call it just some sort of weird Christian play slash ballet.
We
can't know.
We find out later. Yeah. So the whole family arrives with Ross to meet Kelly, who is already at the location. She's kind of like peering out the window of the lobby of what feels like a school auditorium. And then the whole family rolls up in like coordinated blue tops with Ross. And by the way, the Plaths are always doing that, like wearing the same like blue tops. Anyway. Maybe it's a fundamentalist
thing. There's something that
thing.
Feels very Christian about matching blue outfits.
Yeah, and it happens on Sister Wives sometimes too. I don't know what's up with that. So anyway, they meet up with Kelly and she's once again like in her kind of classical musician look, a little more polished. And it is an auditorium and it's a sort of Christian concert. And like Austin said, it's also a ballet of the Holy Spirit and Friends. And then there's a dubstep portion that Ron hates. And then... Kelly's
That's
dance
true.
Class.
There's dubstep that Ron seems disturbed by.
Then Kelly's dance class performs and she brags to Ross, 4 weeks. 4 weeks. I appreciated that. But I don't know what this fucking hodgepodge of a show is. But honestly, I would have loved to be there.
We can't know, but we start to get all of this like Dawn and Ron voiceover again about how that you know that they're attracted to each other and like Kelly needs to be careful. And this is where we get truly the climax of conflict. So we think maybe at the time, okay, is what they're like, Kelly needs to be careful because Ron has saved his kiss. Or excuse me, not Ron. Ron didn't. Okay, get it right. Ross, you know what? Let's just take a moment to think about that Ross and Ron are very similar names.
That's true.
Just respect it. Okay. Ross has saved his kiss, but Kelly hasn't.
Yeah, and that's a bummer.
So then we feel a little bit of tension because all of a sudden Ron and Dawn are a little worried like, is that going to be a problem?
Mm-hmm.
Cut to the people we needed to meet. Take us there.
Kelly rolls up to an apartment complex in a blue Oldsmobile that my family had in maroon when I was a child. I don't know if
That's
you remember
true.
That
I
car.
I drove that car as like a
Oh,
nine-year-old.
My God. You did. Wow. You drove a lot of my family's cars as a child.
I've driven a lot of the Ryan family cars exclusively at a point in which I was not old enough to drive a car. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But so we're in Huntsville, Alabama. We've moved locations. And this is Kelly's real mom's house with her real ass siblings who we have not met
her
yet.
Spiritual parents, okay?
We're in Act 3. It is winter in this documentary, and we're just now meeting who her parents are. So Kelly and her bio family like watched some home videos to break the ice that her mom pulled out. And then like when they're watching the home videos, there's like a pointed moment where the music changes and Kelly says, "Oh, there's Daddy." Then we get some information where Kelly's describing her heart being torn in ways she didn't know how to deal with when she had to leave her father to go to college. Then, after the heartbreak of leaving her father to go to college, her parents actually got divorced and she was, quote, pretty lost after that. And I would say, is that maybe when she gave away her first kiss? Is that the trauma that led to...
Oh, Kelly. Sweet girl.
A sultry time. Maybe. A pleasure of the flesh.
We can't know. Her mom is like there. Now we're having this conversation. And the players in this arena, we get her mom, but we also get her stepdad. We get her sister and her nephew. Her sister and nephew don't talk that much, but they're there. And this is when her mom leans in and she's like telling us about how she thinks the courtship thing is odd.
It's weird, yeah.
And she acknowledges that she thinks that her divorce maybe pushed Kelly to that path mm-hmm. because maybe it seemed safer to her.
Exact, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A little more passive. And she's like, the mom basically expresses like distaste at her daughter like putting her dating life in someone else's hands. And continues to hit home that Kelly should perhaps pursue a more active dating path if she would indeed like to get married.
So we cut to Ron and Dawn, who are having this conversation where they're like, we got to find out if this first kiss thing with Kelly and Ross is going to be a deal breaker.
Is it a deal breaker?
Then we have an aggressive cut back to Kelly's real family where she's at the house. And she's now having a conversation with her stepdad after we've heard a little bit of her mom's perspective, confessional
mm-hmm.
style.
Mm-hmm.
And her mom is in the room and she's mostly listening. The stepdad is talking. And the stepdad is like very pro-virginity. He's like, listen, I'm like about saving it for marriage. I think that's great. But what he says he doesn't understand is that if Kelly's like mature enough to like live out of the house and like make her own choices, why she would let someone else pick her husband? Like why she couldn't mm-hmm. do that herself.
Her response was interesting to me.
100%. And she tries to like liken it to like a lot of people like get their friends' advice and you like ask about like what people think and, you know, like that's normal. And her stepdad's like, you know, listen, she's like Ron finding a guy is like different. Why would you not like figure that out for yourself? And she's like, you know, Ron talked to this one guy and like, and it's probably the guy who, you know, was okay
I think
with
it
homosexuality.
Was. It
lately.
Is that guy. Yeah.
And she's like, and, you know, are we ideologically like are you know, theological beliefs, we're not the same. And her stepdad's like, OK, yeah, but like, why couldn't you go out with that guy and like figure that out yourself? And like Kelly's like, well, I don't want to do that work. He's like, so you want Ron to do that
I know.
Work? And she's like, no, but like my feelings would get involved. And he was like, fucking how? And basically the stepdad is just saying everything we're all thinking.
Big truths. Yeah. And he says that like if she wants to move back in, that he would like become her advocate the way Ron is her advocate.
And then they both like get a little
emotional.
They
both cry a little. Yep.
It's and which is kind of sweet. But she was like, if I move back in, like I would need someone and I would like that. And so you can tell this guy really cares about her. Like it's coming from this place of fondness and everything, but he's like, this is just a little cuckoo cachoo. And again, rapid cutback. Now we go to Ron and Ross like meeting up in like some kind of
we're really
diner
juxtaposing
situation.
parenting styles here.
Absolutely they are, yeah. And essentially Ron and Ross sit down and Ron's trying to get a thermometer read on if, you know, he saved his kiss for sure. And like, if it's a deal breaker, if someone hasn't. And Ross in this moment seems like very rational and logical. And he's like basically cool with people having kissed before in their past if they're aligned with what they want now. And he goes, you know, like God shapes you, like, you know, whatever happens in your past, like makes you the person you are. Like, I would just want them to like want to save it now and like be aligned with that. But like, I'm not going to be like upset if that's something that happened. And they're like, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
So then, again, rapid pivot back to mom.
Yep.
Kelly's not spiritual mom, not Dawn, but her mom. And her mom is like, I just really like kind of want to know what the deal is. And her mom, I think, makes this really like fair argument or case of what's happening. She goes, I think like some people think it's like positive to learn from other people's mistakes. And I think in some ways she's like, Kelly's trying to learn from mine because I got divorced, whatever. But she's like, I think you're doing it in an extreme way. Mm-hmm. And she kind of says, like, I'd like you to move more towards the middle ground. And Kelly's like, what does that mean? And her mom's like, well, be like more active than passive about meeting people. And here's where I like really got on board with the mom too. Cause Kelly's like, well, I just like, God will make it happen. And then her mom's like, how do you know God isn't leading me to convince you to not do this? Which I think is fucking funny. But she also says this poignant thing, which I think whether you're like a God person or a fate person or just like any kind of predestination person, her mom says, look, God can guide your steps, but you need to be stepping. And her mom's like, we have free will.
Okay? And it's interesting, given what happens in a few moments coming up, it's interesting that perhaps Kelly is pro predestination if she believes that, like, if it's God, like God's will for her to have a husband, like that will happen because God plans everything. Does she really believe that? We will see. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, we'll find out. No, go ahead.
So after the mom says like a rude little thing that is a rhyme, which is tick tock, the biological clock, Kelly says it'll be worth the wait. We move on. Kelly leaves. She drives back to the Wrights' house, back to Michigan, and gives us a pensive monologue about waiting and Ross. And then it's on to another family dinner. Ross is there again. And he and Kelly are flirting pretty heavily, I'll say, at this dinner. And
yes, and Kelly's voiceover is telling us that she's trying not to, like, look him too deeply in the eyes and that she has to, like, keep looking away.
Doesn't want to get lost, absolutely. But Ron catches on. He's wise to what's happening. And he asks Ross to switch in places so that Kelly and Ross are no longer sitting next to each other. Ron's a big
weirdo. He says he wants to look out the window. None of us believe that.
We don't. Ron's a big weirdo.
Right.
Then we're
back rapidly to Kelly teaching some Christian dance class,
but this one's sort of like more of a sexual teen dance.
It felt a little hornier. Still not secular music, though.
It's true. But she's obsessing about Ross in a voiceover, of course, and we see her check her phone and texting him by the lockers at the studio. It's big, big high school energy for this 33-year-old lady.
High school energy.
Yeah.
And this is where we get some of the craziest Kelly confessional of the whole show, in my opinion, where she says, you know, I'm starting to think about, like, what if Ross, like, was my husband and, like, what would that be like? And she goes, you know, seeing Ross as my leader. And then, and I quote, I am giving up my right to have my own rights. I was like,
my right to have my own rights.
Come again? And she basically, her justification for all of this is just that, like, she's like, I want the roles the way God destined them. She's talking about, like, men being this way, women being this way in the Bible, which I just, like, would like to chime in again and say, so you're basing it on the gender norms in the Bible because that's what God wants from a book that were written by men of the time, okay? Okay, all right.
It's what's happening for her. I'm just going to
leave that there.
Yeah.
But before we spend too much additional time on this narrative with Ross and Kelly, I do just need to point out a very important sidebar that happened.
I know.
Ron just interjects in Paul. This voiceover. He goes, and Paul, who is Ross's brother, who he brought along, who's 18.
He's come to like three dinners.
Actual bio daughter, Savannah, the 13-year-old, he says, you know, Paul and Savannah are really hitting it off. And they're like, Paul's 18 and Savannah is 13. And I'm like, this is illegal. This is pervy.
It's
and
he's
like,
but,
you know, when they're like 20, 25, like, who knows? And it's a small community. And
you're going to wait 7 years? What's going on for the Civil War then, wedding?
To Civil War wedding in that Confederate uniform. We can't know. This is where Dawn chimes in and speaks some of the truth, which is that Dawn has given some of, or Dawn, that Ron has given some of his heart away to Ross. And I'm like, Ron is using this to make friends. And it's the thing he says about the first guy who's like super old. But when he's talking about that initial guy who is too cool with the homos for Ron, he says, like, I love meeting new people and like I get to meet a lot of cool guys this way. I like meeting all these cool guys. And I'm like, Ron is like maybe out here just trying to make a homie for Ron. Okay. That's my two cents.
That's very interesting. Very interesting. I think you're right. And I have to add, before we move on to the big shift in this narrative with Ross, I just have to mention, and I didn't notice this, Maddie noticed this when we were watching, everyone in this dinner scene with Paul, where they talk about Paul and Savannah getting together, everyone is wearing an American flag tee, every single person.
Oh my God, I did not notice. Do you think it's the 4th of July?
I don't know. It's what we can't know we're in winter, though.
I honestly hope that it wasn't, though. I hope that they're just like celebrating Flag Day or
well,
just
the act
Monday.
We're in is winter.
So it doesn't line up.
It doesn't. That's right. And it is bare That's outside. Right. It seems like winter during the winter portion.
Mm. They're just patriots, okay, you guys?
Just patriots. So then there's a big shift in the flavor of everything.
Drum roll, please, honestly.
Absolutely. Dawn is sitting at the family desktop, and she is on Facebook, and she sees that Ross has posted that he has a friend who died who was shot by his younger brother, which is
look violent,
fucking
death.
Horrible and very violent. And what Ross is posting is that it was God's will. And Dawn is like real uncomfortable about Ross posting that. And
yeah, he's saying this abrupt ending to life, God's will. He's saying God had a plan and it was a good plan.
Yeah.
And this is the most redeeming moment of Dawn. It's like Dawn freaks out and she's like, I am like done. And like,
mm-hmm. she's finished saying, like, with Ross.
And she's like, you know what? This woman just like lost her son at the hands of like her other son. Like, what if his mom is seeing this and this guy mm-hmm. is being like, this is God's plan? And I was like, Dawn's a little rational right now.
Yeah.
Dawn is like maybe the most normal anyone's been this whole documentary.
Agree. And there's a family discussion that follows with Kelly in a black velvet top with a square neckline, which is exactly the kind of top that I mentioned in our last Renfest episode. But
correct.
Dawn and Kelly are discussing the Ross problem as the younger kids continue to color their wedding plans nearby. And basically, Dawn is asking Kelly, can you really submit to a man who would say it was God's will to put a gun into a young boy's hand and have him kill his brother? And would Kelly be able to just stand by while her husband perhaps went up to someone at a funeral and said to a bereaved person, a bereft person, that this, you know, needed to happen and it was good that this happened? Can Kelly do it?
I love that she gave that example, though, because this is some real life
application. Dawn's really hitting it, yeah.
Dawn's going for it, and she's like, this is like a broken person in reference to Ross. And she goes, and you would be under his authority, which mm-hmm. is a crazy lifestyle
you
choice.
You gave up your right to have your own
like,
rights.
This is intense. And for me, this moment was like actually like oddly hopeful that they think it's crazy and that Dawn is questioning like, can you actually submit to someone who thinks this?
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, has its own problems, but it is a tiny beam of light. I agree. So then we're going to cut back to Kelly at the family desktop, busy emailing Ross about the situation and just kind of like laying out like her differing opinions about God's will. And it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems like they kind of like agree to disagree about like their feelings on extreme predestination.
Yeah. You know, Ross says it's okay that we disagree. And Kelly says that she likes that, I think, because it comes across as maybe somebody who's like okay with like them not agreeing about everything. And Kelly has kind of told Dawn even that she goes, I'm okay with maybe that he's thinking this as long as his heart is like focused on God. And like maybe we have some theological differences, like, but it's okay. And so she's kind of into him also being like, it's okay if mm-hmm. we don't agree.
And it feels like there's openness to talk about it. And Kelly specifically says that she's excited to talk to him more about it and just like have him explain why he thinks that and her maybe still not agree. But seems like maybe Ross was not so forthcoming with how he actually felt about this because we see some on-screen emails. Kelly is repeatedly emailing Ross with no response. And
no response.
Totally ghosted.
Lightly ghosted.
Yep. And Ross had plans to come up and visit the family, likely with Paul again. And 2 days before they were supposed to come for the visit, Ross finally emails to say that he cannot make it. And it is at this point that Kelly feels betrayed and confused and actually paranoid that Dawn and Ron and Ross are tricking her and that Ross really is coming. And I would say that
yeah,
that's crazy.
She plays out
but that's sort of what happened already.
Well, 100%. It is what happened already. And she's doing, like, honestly, it's very relatable that she's, like, confused. So she's playing out every scenario. She's like, maybe it's, like, good. Like, maybe he's trying to surprise me and, like, actually is going to show up. Or, like, maybe it's, like, X, Y, and Z. Or, like, I don't understand. And it's kind of that thing anybody does when they're into somebody and you get the maybe the vibe that they're not so into you. Mm-hmm. And you're like, but maybe what if? Or they're busy.
The denial phase.
You know?
Yes.
She's playing it all out.
She is. Every possibility. Ron, too, honestly, weirdly, even though Don is, like, very against it, Ron, as the priest head of the family, is, you know, he's not ready to let Ross go, for sure. So Ron's driving to meet up with him. Yeah, he's meeting Ross, and he's praying aloud on his way. We get some of that. And when they meet up, he weirdly compliments Ross's hugs. It's very
uncomfortable. Who taught you to hug? And he's like, I don't know. I guess my mom. He's like, you give some of the best hugs I've ever had in my life.
And then they talk about it for too long. And it's
too long.
Yeah, it's not okay. And Ron, then after the hug stuff, immediately launches into asking what Ross's intentions are with Kelly. Then Ross chokes and stumbles for a while and looks at his hands, then explains that the theological differences are too great. And I'll say once again, for the theology nerds, predestination stuff.
Absolutely. And it basically, he says, you know, now that I've gotten to know you guys, like, some of the differences, like, it's just not going to work for me. And he says, those differences are okay to have between friends, but not, like, in a marriage. And
someone
Ron's
to steer
like,
your
I don't know
with.
If God wants you to, like, really. And Ross is like,
no,
listen,
he does.
Dude, I'm out. he does. I'm out. And he's like, but I still want to be friends with you and the family because, like, that's never even, like, our friendship. That's, like, in the courtship. It's, like, not even how that started. And
should have guarded your
Ron's
heart
like,
against
yeah,
the family.
Yeah, we should totally be friends. And I'm like, Ron just wants to make fucking friends.
He does.
But Ron calls Don and kind of tells him that Ross is out in the car. And then he's like, I got to think about this. Flash to Ron back at home. We don't hear the exact words that they're using, but it's like voiceovers where you can clearly tell they're like sharing this with Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And girl is just in full denial. And she's like, then why did we even spend all this time together?
What was
together?
All this and for? All this time?
What
why
was all
did
this
we
for?
Even
because
do this?
Well, and again, you have to remember, they don't believe in dating. They believe in, like,
she wants to marry
picking
a stranger.
Someone who will maybe be your husband or your wife and mm-hmm. then just, like, going from there. And it probably feels a little bit like they dated, okay?
It probably does. Mm.
Then we get one of my favorite, most disparaging lines of the documentary when Don just says, when you moved in, I realized you might not ever get married.
Amazing. You got to get right with that. It's like if you give a loan to a friend, you have to like be right with not getting it back in order to give it out. Same deal. Dawn has to be okay with Kelly never leaving if she said all right. Oh, my God.
We're your spiritual parents and like you may never leave here. But I just think something to think about. It's like, man, you're putting your whole life plan and your goals on another person. These folks who are like, they won't have a career. They won't go to college. Their goal is to be a housewife and a mother. And that's what they're going to do. And I'm like, what if that person doesn't materialize? Then what?
Or
are
what if the nation takes a turn
forever?
Yes, that. Or what if the nation takes a turn and everyone needs a two-income household? What if that?
What if that? The nation's already taken a turn because of, you know, what Obama was doing in Israel, what Glenn Beck told me about it.
And the homosexuals as elders in the church. Absolutely.
They're out there, man. They're out there.
They really are.
So when we get to spring, we've got Kelly who's like, I think what a woman really wants to know, and she gives this laundry list of questions. It's like, am I beautiful? Mm-hmm. Could a man want me? Could a man want to keep me? Could I be somebody's wife? All these things.
That one hit me too.
And I'm just like, dear Lord, help us. And then she goes on and she's like, some women may find that like in a man, whatever, you know, all these good things. And she goes, but I have found that, you know, that and so much more with God.
Yep.
And even, and then she comes back to full circle and she goes, you know, I was even lacking things, you know, from my relationship with my dad. And I'm like, man, this divorce really took you to a place like, honey, and that's kind of the end of it. Kelly's like our last voice, and she's like, I love the Lord. Mm-hmm. I don't like all, I'm not getting that from a man. I can't even get this from my father.
She explains,
God is giving me everything.
A romantic adjacent relationship with the Lord. Absolutely. And
100%. In which case, I'm like, sister, join a convent, but they're not.
She
Catholic,
really should.
So,
but
know.
Yeah. Mm. But we see, or we get like her kind of like breathy soprano voice, like a worship song that I don't know the name of, while we see like footage of her doing ballet to kind of like wrap up her telling us like that she needs to be told that she's beautiful and wanted and to be kept by a man. And the closing on-screen text.
Screen fades to black, and this is what it says.
Take it.
You guys. Okay, so I want you to remember at the beginning of the documentary, at the beginning of the documentary, that Kelly had been with them for 7 years. Mm-hmm. Okay, the fade to black screen is, it's been 10 years since Kelly moved in with the Wrights. There hasn't been another suitor or anyone else since Ross.
No additional suitors. What?
Cue to credits.
Cue credits.
That's it.
Yep. That's where we leave them. And I do have a little bit of info on a where are they now. Obviously,
where this are they now?
Was in 2015 is where we leave the Wrights and Kelly Bogus. And according to some information that I found and dug around on Instagram about last year, in 2019, it seems like the Wright family, under Ron's guidance, decided that the right thing for them to do was to be, quote, mobile for Jesus. And what that means is that they've sold all of their possessions and they're living out of either like a trailer or like some kind of a converted vehicle. And just traveling around, spreading the word of the Lord, taking donations. And Kelly decided not to go with the Wrights when they went mobile for Jesus because she wanted to continue teaching dance classes. So she stayed put in Grand Rapids and is currently single and I believe 40 years old. So that's where Kelly is. But I'm glad that she's free of them. I assume she's living on her own, but maybe she has found a different 60-year-old fundamentalist couple to live with. I don't know about that.
I mean, what a whirlwind.
Honestly. Her Instagram is mostly just her dance class and a couple of selfies, so I didn't get much from that.
I think that's how she feels like she'll find suitors, because we will say those are the things Ross, like, first asked her about. He's like, oh, your dance classes.
What else is he going to ask her about?
Absolutely nothing. They don't know each other, but they're trying to get married.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you guys, that's a courtship. We really told you about nearly every moment of it, so I don't know if you need to watch it, but there are some incredible visuals if you just like to Google the cast for kind of a visual aid in this experience.
You might have your own beloved sound bites, just like we did.
That's true. We left some gems out because there's truly too many. When I started this, I was writing everything down. My girlfriend looked over and was like, you know, you can't just type. Congrats to Amy on that. Bite. Yeah. 100%
gold. You can't leave it unturned. I mean, wow, truly. Oh my gosh. These folks, they're just building that castle in heaven, I swear to God. Whew.
And if you liked this content, if this kind of thing is up your alley, hit the backlog for Quiverful and the Virgin Daughters. But do you have other feelings or thoughts, comments before the musical director comes out?
I just think I'd like to just mention in summary, you know, outside of, you know, not sharing people's religious persuasions, watching something like this calls into a lot of questions about, you know, where you seek your ideology, how people influence people. I'm like, how did Kelly go from a family that was like seemingly like religious, but like not this kind of version and like engrossing yourself in it? How do you start praying for spiritual parents? And then how do you cross a theological line even of like fate and predestination and God's will, because they're like, we won't even move. We'll let the men come to us for Kelly. And yet when somebody else says, well, this was God's plan to happen, even though it was something like violent and terrible, they're like, well, that's where we draw the line.
Right.
It brings into a lot of subtleties and nuances and questions. And again, more disturbing anecdotes and imagery about people, you know, just trying to protect vaginas. It's rough.
Absolutely.
It's rough out there.
Vaginas, predestination, double talk. That's really what it is. I enjoyed it very much, I will say.
I enjoyed it very much, too. 11 out of 10.
It had the Plathville vibes that I needed.
Listen, if you like if you're somebody who's out here watching Wild Wild Country, if you're interested in the cult kind of stuff, I really think spend some time with religious, you know, outliers.
Okay? Yeah. Or if you had like your own purity culture bullshit growing up, like this is very cathartic, if I'm honest.
Unpack it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think it's about that time. Musical director.
Polishing those mallets.
Cue the vibraphone.
Cue it.
All right. So I do have a would you rather for you on choosing your spiritual parents. So whose roof?
Oh, shit. This is great. I'm hyped. Okay.
Whose roof will you live under? And these people are also going to make like all of your life choices until you are married and passed off to a husband.
Oh, damn. Or if I'm not.
Well, indefinitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then you'd just be with these people. So would you rather have your spiritual parents be Donnie and Marie Osmond? I know they are siblings, but they would raise you as parents.
Oh, God. I mean, they – listen, I have questions about the sibling sexual fodder of that family.
Anyway. We all do. We all do. Or would you rather have Kris Jenner as both parents, of course, because she
Kris Jenner as both. It's not even a question. I probably have a career.
You probably would. But
– like, who even knows what?
Are you ready for that? That's so intense. The Osmonds might just kind of, like, quietly keep you and, like, you just, like, go to their pool and stuff. They might take you to Vegas
Donnie
too
and
much.
Marie, I feel like they'd sing around me all the time. And they I would. Don't know if I could. I feel like I could do enough to endear myself to Kris Jenner.
I don't and know. Like, whew, you better be a workhorse. I'm ready to see your
career. I am a workhorse.
Blossom.
Maybe a little bit. We'll find out. We could do something.
We'll find
we
out.
Could really capitalize on Kris Jenner. And then I could like fade off into the distance, you know?
Yeah. No, that's true.
I think I could get out of it, you know, but it would be enough to maybe soft launch my true career and passion.
That's a good point. And then who's
I
to say
ride the coattails
that once you were married and you could make your own decisions that you couldn't get divorced? And
exactly.
Kris is very familiar with a wedding and a wedding for a reason, you know.
Well, and here's something I'd say, too. What makes Kris Jenner the unlikely choice for this kind of scenario is the, you know, it's very patriarchal, the families we were talking about and the beliefs in this documentary of courtship, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the Kardashians are a matriarchy.
They are.
And so if anything, going in as someone who identifies as a woman, I feel like I would be very empowered in this and that like, I mean, probably the husband selection, like, probably wouldn't be that great because, like, most of the guys, like, floating around the Kardashians aren't that great looking at you, Tristan Thompson. You know,
You have to remember who she's going to set you up with.
I didn't choose it, so I don't think it would be real heartbreak, you know?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Kris televising your heartbreak for her own personal gain for
I could play
years.
It up.
And years.
And then I could write a tell-all book about how, like...
Wow, the abuse.
Kris Jenner.
Absolutely.
You know.
How you were locked in at night.
I could get in a fight with the Kardashians publicly.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So many opportunities, really.
I'd probably have to become friends with Taylor Swift for this to work out, which is not something I'm interested in. But, you know, never... In the words of Justin Bieber, never say never.
Yeah. And I would... I don't know. Maybe not choose the same thing. I don't know.
You going Donnie and Marie?
Well, the problem with Donnie and Marie is the suitors that they would choose. Like, I do believe that
Absolutely. They
are, like, gonna pull some really weird, perhaps, like, purity culture people for me. But
I think, yeah, and then you're gonna be at home listening to Donnie sing all of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah.
Like, they're the ones where you really have to worry about the religious zealotness. Kris Jenner just pretends to be Christian to write off some things on her taxes.
I don't think that's very true. I don't think that the Osmonds would exploit me as much as Kris, but also, like you mentioned, you know, exploitation can be a two-way street. So, like, if I'm gonna get married
baby.
Out of there, like, maybe I'm going to do a couple years with Kris and hope for the best.
I envision in this world that Kris Jenner is running my life. You're still my bestie. And I know you'd have some ideas about how to capitalize on situation I was in.
Absolutely. Oh, now I just want to like work Kris Jenner with you.
Honestly, a dream. Listen, you guys, I want to hear about your spiritual parents. I want to hear about who you want to work as your spiritual parent. We can't know.
Oh, but next week we have to real quick because this is our like sort of soft season wrap. Obviously, the horoscopes keep rolling. The horoscopes never stop. They are monthly independently of our seasons. But
listen, you guys, we can't let you, you know, go a month without some capital W horoscopes.
Absolutely. But next week you get some horoscopes and then we're on like a little bit of hiatus for July. And keep an eye out for
season 8.
Yeah.
We were here together.
We were. Keep an eye out for a best of drop mid-July, but we'll be back with the regular format at the beginning of August. And we'll probably tell you this that's again right. next week during Horoscope, but not all of you will be there. So I thought I'd tell
you
now.
Yeah, listen, that's true. We will tell you again, but you're right. We got to give you a little nod for those of you who aren't hanging with your non-astrologers. But man, season 8, what a ride. And if you're on the fence about it when it comes out, I'm truly very excited for this this season's best of.
Oh, I am too.
Bookend. It'll be fun.
Agree. Okay, well, bye. We'll see you in August for something. Bye.
Yeah. In the meantime, get at us on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, and on Twitter.
Give us content ideas. We want to do what you want us to do. That's the thing.
Yeah. What kind of topics are you trying to hear in season 9? We'll think about it. Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.